Have you ever led a meeting in English and felt like you were translating in your head while trying to manage the room? You understand the strategy, you know the agenda, but your authority feels weaker than it should.
So you hesitate to interrupt where an interruption would be helpful. You soften your tone where boldness and clarity might be more useful. And the meeting closes without clear decisions or next steps. And that doesn't reflect your true competence. Today, we're fixing that.
Welcome to The Fluent Edge, the podcast for busy professionals who want to level up their English communication.
I'm Dr. Howie Jacobson, executive coach, author, and mindset strategist.
And I'm Sean Watson, your English communication coach and accent clarity specialist.
Together, we connect language and leadership so you can speak better, lead smarter, and thrive globally.
So Howie, let's start here. What should someone keep in mind when calling a meeting in the first place?
So the first thing I think to keep in mind is what's the purpose of the meeting and should it be a meeting? So in international business, meetings take up so much of our time. Everyone I know complains that they're in so many meetings, they're not actually getting work done. So I want us to think about what's the purpose of the process that might be a meeting, right? People have heard the expression, it could have been an email. Right? Have you heard that, Sean?
Yes, I have. I love that.
So the idea is we all got together and the financial people pull their hair out over the amount of money spent on meetings. If you take everyone's salary and bonuses and health insurance and everything you're spending, you get 17 people in the room for an hour and a half and nothing happens. So let's think about the purpose of the meeting. It's usually not a good idea to have a meeting to just tell people something, right? That's what could have been an email. So we want a meeting to hear people's perspectives, to bring people closer together so they can work together, to make a decision. And so one of the things we want to take into account is who should be in the room for the meeting. And generally, it's fewer people than we think. So that instead of inviting 25 people, can 5 show up who represent the other 20 and really get things done. So I want everyone to think about if you're going to call a meeting, make it strategic and make the strategy match what you're really trying to accomplish. If you see an organization where people are being CC'd or BCC'd or invited to meetings that they don't want to attend, that's a symptom of a deep lack of clarity and structure. So there's an expression, CYA, which we will translate as cover your butt. If the organization is focused on moving things forward, as opposed to everyone engaging in risk management for their own career, you can avoid a lot of these issues of wasted time, of unclear chains of decision-making, of people who are wasting a lot of their time.
Excellent. So we're changing things up a little bit today, and we're going to be presenting a slide deck. I've put together a 5-step leadership framework for people who are non-native English speakers. And you may have already given a lot of presentations in English, but sometimes to go back to a template that can help you navigate through what can be a very nerve-wracking experience. So we put this into 5 steps, starting with to open with clarity. We often have the person who is unclear where the meeting is going, and they say something like, thanks everyone for joining. I guess we should probably get started. Does anyone have anything they want to talk about first? Or no? Okay. You know, this kind of thing. You need to really establish your clarity and then set expectations early. Let people know what's coming up. What can they expect? And guide the discussion. This doesn't mean that you have to dominate it, but you have to make sure that it's staying within the scope of the discussion.
In addition to being strategic before the meeting starts, is also to co-create the agenda with the people who are going to be in the meeting, or at least establish consent so people know why they're there, they're prepared, and ideally they have contributed as well. So all that clarity doesn't have to all come from you. In fact, it can be more powerful if it comes from others.
Great. And then for 4, to redirect with diplomacy. So what does that mean? It means that if somebody brings up a topic or they take the discussion into a direction that isn't necessarily helpful or relevant, you have to be able, as the leader of the meeting, to steer it back into the direction that you want to go, but in a calm way that isn't bossy or domineering. And then finally, you have to close decisively. And we'll go through all of these points in more detail. So leadership communication needs to be structured and not improvised, especially if English isn't your first language. And that's why following these five steps could really benefit people, because when you use structure, your authority becomes more visible. It becomes more apparent.
Yeah, structure is what we need until we are fluent enough to improvise. Even when we're improvising, it's useful to improvise off of the structure. And when we're going to talk about things like redirect with diplomacy, I would want to have a phrase that I've practiced. If someone brings up something that I think is irrelevant, it might be something like, I'm so glad you're thinking about that. Let's put a pin in it, or let's put it in the parking lot and come back to it later. Is that okay? So to have actual words rather than just, oh dear, what do I do now? They're taking my meeting in the wrong direction.
Excellent. So let's look at the first step here about opening with strategic clarity. And I mentioned what I like to call the vague meanderer. Meander is to wander aimlessly. It also happens to be a river in Turkey, which I just recently discovered.
I did not know that. I'm going to look that up.
I couldn't find any linguistic connection with other English words.
I want to match you with the word vague before meander. Vague is also a word that means to wander, right? A vagrant or vagaries, vagabond. In fact, in Spanish, vago is like a slacker. And the vagus nerve is the nerve that wanders throughout the whole body.
Very cool. So I mentioned earlier the vague meanderer. So that's when somebody just has no idea where they're going with the meeting. Or the other way of starting it in a weak way is the so-called late start apologist. Somebody who says, sorry, we're starting 10 minutes late. I know everyone's busy. We're just waiting for a few more people. There's John. Okay, should we wait for Sarah too? You know, this kind of thing where it's just very haphazard.
Yeah, well, it punishes people for showing up on time. And as you said, it sets an energy that is both boring and frantic at the same time, because everyone knows now we have to rush through a process that we're not giving it the time that it deserved, because everyone will have to go at the end to their next meeting. The way to solve this, you don't have to make people bad or wrong. Like, things happen. Someone's always going to be late for some good reason. You start the meeting on time. You acknowledge and welcome people. You don't make them feel bad if they come in late. You make it up to them to catch up and to participate. And you set expectations, because human nature being what it is, if you allow people to come in late and there are no consequences, they will come in late. If you're not on time, you don't come in. You're not blaming anyone. You're saying, this is just our rule. 99% of the time, that will take care of the lateness, because there's real teeth to the rule.
So we're really talking about making sure we understand the purpose of the meeting. What is the goal? What is the outcome that we're looking for? And how do we get there? What is the process? So here's an example that you could use. The purpose of today's meeting is to finalize our Q4 strategy. So there you've stated what the purpose is, and then you're talking about the outcome. By the end of this session, we will have aligned on budget allocation. And there's a nice little grammatical move there with we will have aligned. So this is future perfect, right? Future perfect. We will have aligned. And we often use this when we're thinking about a future date or future time when something will have been finished or accomplished. And it's one of the least used English tenses out of the 12 that we use, but I really encourage people to learn it, because it really helps to talk about a specific deadline or time in the future when something will have been accomplished. So here we will have aligned on budget allocation. And then we talk a little bit about the process. So I'll begin with a brief overview followed by discussion. So here you've got your purpose, your outcome, and your process. So Howie, in your opinion, what actually creates executive presence in a meeting beyond just vocabulary?
One of the things that creates executive presence is soft power, which is to say you don't need to be in charge of every step of it. If you're calling the meeting and you're the leader, your words carry a lot of weight. So if the goal is getting the group thinking better, you may want to purposefully step back, not give your opinion, have someone else do the overview and speak last, so that other people aren't immediately defaulting to what they think is the right answer. And when we're talking about having a discussion, there are many ways to structure a discussion that can get people thinking creatively. So rather than saying, okay, everyone, let's go around the room and say what you think, You could tell everyone, write for 1 minute, write a sentence, write 3 bullet points, write what you're thinking. And that way people will start to have ideas that are more divergent because they haven't all been influenced by the same thing. So one way to have executive presence is to have gimmicks, to have exercises, to have ways of structuring human interaction that get you closer to your goal.
I like that. And I just add to that too, from my perspective as an English communication coach, there's a tendency, especially in North America, to use upspeak or upward inflection, just like I just did, to use upspeak. And then I went to the store and then I met my friend.
Yeah, it's a question, right? Upspeak can signify a question. Did you want to go to the movies? But if it comes at the end of a statement, it signifies that you're not sure, that you're full of doubt, that you're not grounded. We want to tell people to watch out for that and as well to notice if it's a linguistic tick you've picked up that doesn't have a meaning to it or whether it is a kind of deferring to someone else's authority in a way that might be undermining your own. So I would work both angles.
Great. One other thing I'd also add to this is to moderate your pace. And I think we've talked about this in previous episodes. But when I'm working with people, as soon as they start to be really conscious of pacing themselves and taking breaks and leaning in to certain words like adjectives or key nouns, then there's more intention behind it and it doesn't feel like they're racing through everything. So let's move on to the next slide. And this is about establishing expectations. So I've just included a few common sentences that you can use. For example, let's keep comments focused and concise. So here you're not being bossy, you're just setting the ground rules. And I've been in some board meetings where people throw up their hands constantly. So if we say something like, we'll address detailed questions at the end, then that leaves a little bit of room for yes and no questions, for example. What do you think of that, Howie?
It depends on the function of the meeting. If the goal of the meeting is to come to a decision quickly and the information should already be out there, we don't want people asking detailed questions about the report you sent last week that they haven't read. You know, if the meeting is, let's start to create our Q4 strategy, then it might be perfectly acceptable to have detailed questions, to have counterfactuals back and forth, to have well-run conflict. So I would say, again, always go back to what's the purpose here and do the activities of the meeting match that purpose.
Good. And another phrase you can use is, let's remain aligned with today's objective. So you're just encouraging this kind of collective decision to stay on track with today's objective. So you can be firm about it without being bossy with this type of phrase. And then the last one, we'll park that for a separate discussion. We'll move that into a future meeting.
The parking lot is a metaphor that you hear a lot. I also talk about putting a pin in it, as if you're taking a piece of paper and sticking it to a wall with a pin. It's there. You're not focused on it right now, but it's in your field of vision, so you won't forget it. So from a mindset perspective, what is the biggest mistake that you see non-native English-speaking professionals make when they chair meetings?
They treat it like a performance that they need to survive instead of a conversation that they're there to facilitate. I see a tendency to over-prepare scripts. I see a tendency to apologize for their English. And I also see some cases where people stay silent when they don't catch something instead of asking for clarification. And there are many other things as well that you could include in that. But I think generally it's about treating it like a big performance instead of a conversation.
I'm a little bit curious from your perspective about mistakes people might make coming from different cultures. Are there different meeting cultures in different parts of the world with different rules about who gets to speak, how often, what the purpose of the meeting is, how you behave? Do you eat and drink? Do you check your phone? Do you have side conversations?
Good question. Generally, when it comes to hierarchy, there are certain ways that you have to address people in meetings in Germany, for example, or in Japan, where you have to use people's full names or full titles. And also for questions in some cultures, even at the end, might be discouraged. Let's move on to the next step, guiding the dialogue. And I've just included a few typical phrases that you can use to keep things going. So the first one could be something like, let's move to the next agenda item. Let's just keep it going. And this might sound very logical, but again, sometimes people feel that they're being too bossy, or because English isn't their first language, they don't want to come across as too domineering. And then if somebody does bring up a point in a meeting, for Maria, for example, you could say, well, building on Maria's point, I would like to add the following. So that's another way to guide the dialogue along if you are encouraging people to speak during the meeting. And of course, you've always got a few people in the room who don't like to speak. And I know this is a tricky one because you could say something like, I'd like to hear from someone who hasn't spoken yet. But as you probably have seen, Howie, over the years, that doesn't necessarily mean that person is going to put their hand up. So what do? Do you simply put somebody on the spot and just say, okay, Julio, can you give us your opinion? What would you say to that, Howie?
I would say here is where leadership is a question of knowing your team. So Julio might be the best spreadsheet analyst that you have, who goes off and does all sorts of research and collates things, but is uncomfortable speaking off the cuff and would rather read something. Or Julio might be someone who is great one-on-one and nervous in groups. And so you can get the benefit of Julio's brilliance by having Julio partner up with someone who then expresses, Julio and I have been working on this, and here's what we've come up with. Here's where we differ a little bit. And so knowing the strengths of the people on your team, because there are people on your team who are going to have very different neurologies. And rather than taking a chance and putting people on the spot in areas where they can perceive that they're failing, know them well enough, talk to them, find out their preferences, create a way for them to succeed. I'll tell you a quick story that I just heard, a music story. So I hope you like it. I'm going to hum a couple of bars and you tell me what piece this is. Do 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 do.
Charlie Brown Christmas.
Yep. Charlie Brown Christmas. So the pianist who played that is named Vince Guaraldi. He was famous for having the smallest, stubbiest little fingers. People would watch him. They could not believe he could play the piano. He could not reach an octave with his fingers. So his left hand, instead of playing octave chords, was this sort of hypnotic chase.
Really?
His right hand was playing thirds and sixths. And if he did do larger jumps than that, it would be syncopated because he couldn't play the notes at the same time. So how I'm thinking about this now is he had some tremendous constraints. He also couldn't read music. He also had no formal training. All of this could have made him fail as a musician, but all these constraints made him be a different, he could have been a bad version of Oscar Peterson or another jazz pianist, but instead he was uniquely himself. So when you have people that you're leading on your team, their constraints aren't necessarily performance improvement goals. When they could be doing something else, when they could be sharing with somebody else, when they could be writing a report and offering information that way, rather than trying to pigeonhole everyone into whatever form of communication you are most comfortable with.
But I had no idea that Vince had stubby fingers and that he was able to rise to the occasion and create such beautiful, memorable music. I mean, that was 50 years ago?
Yeah, it was in the mid-60s.
And when you hear the kids singing in the choir in the background, I said to my wife, do you realize that they're all in their 70s and 80s now? Which is really mind-blowing when you think about it.
I just read today that Farrell's from Harold and Maude dies. Bud Cort, who in my mind is always 20 years old.
Yeah, for me too. Incredible. That's a classic film of the 60s, right? Was it the 60s or early 70s?
And it was around 1970, so either 69 or 71, something.
Right.
Like
and that.
That
also featured the music of Cat Stevens, who later became Yusuf Islam. I was a huge Cat Stevens fan when I was younger. And I remember the first time I saw that film, I didn't realize that he was on the soundtrack. And I just thought, wow, this is so great.
Yes.
Back to meetings. So when a meeting goes off track, Howie, what separates reactive leaders from composed leaders?
Well, a reactive leader might panic and look out of control or scared or roll over. a reactive leader might also clamp down and become abusive. That means bossy. I would say a composed leader notices their own neurology and is receptive to what's going on. There are times when a leader might say, hey, listen, we are on a different track than the goal of this meeting. I'd like to take a pulse of the room. Is this more important? Or I'm going to make an executive decision here. There's a lot of energy around this. And as the person in charge of this deliverable, I'm making an executive decision that we are going to put a pin in this discussion and move back so that you're honoring the moment, because you may have, you know, a goal for a meeting, but a good meeting is what we call emergent. It's not like watching a TV show that was filmed and is going to play out the same. A good meeting is a little bit unpredictable, because if you knew going in what was going to happen, you wouldn't need to have the meeting. So composed leaders are present with themselves and with other people and with the work.
I love that. Let's move on to step four here, to redirect with diplomacy. So again, this is the idea of calmly and efficiently making sure that you're steering the meeting in the direction that you want to go. We often talk about acknowledging what somebody says, but then to maybe refocus and try to contain the situation. So here, for example, somebody says something and you could say, that's an important consideration. Let's return to pricing for now and schedule a dedicated session on branding. For me, that tells me that I'm still validating what the person is saying, and I'm suggesting a special focus be given to their question at a later date.
People appreciate when someone else can hold focus, because it's very hard for us to hold focus in anything these days. There's so many competing interests for our attention. So someone who can say, this is what we're here to accomplish, you can feel like you're safe, you can relax, you don't have to hold the focus because someone else is doing it. The only two things I would say is the leader must do it without shaming someone else, making them feel like they're either sabotaging or they're intellectually lazy or silly. If you notice there's enough energy in the room to move to a different place, to be flexible enough to consider that. I like what you said, it's an important consideration. I really hear that there's a lot of energy around this other topic. I might be wrong, but I'm making the decision that we are sticking to this topic. So people can feel good. Everyone doesn't have to agree with the leader, but you have to respect that the leader is doing it from a place of consideration and authority.
So how to interrupt professionally or politely? And there are tons of ways to do this. I've just created a few of them for you here. These are often called strategic softeners. They're just gentler, more diplomatic ways to say things that don't easily offend people or make people feel like my opinion doesn't count. You're not invalidating people. So this one is a very common one in North American meetings. So may I jump in for a moment? Here you're using the very polite modal verb may instead of saying can. Can implies ability. Can I? Yes, of course I can. But may is asking the permission of somebody.
Is that a phrase that you would go up at the end of?
Yeah. May I jump in for a moment? All languages have their own musicality. And I'm working with people, especially from Slavic or Asian cultures. It's very hard for them to figure out what is the important word to stress in a sentence or what is the correct inflection. So this is something that can only be learned over time. And there's no one size fits all or one rule to rule them all. It's really based on the context. Because here, I could also say, may I jump in for a moment? I know this other guy has been jumping in like crazy, but may I? So you can also play around with word stress as well. Okay, moving along. Let me pause you there. Now, some people may think that sounds a bit bossy. I think, again, it's the intention behind your words and how you say it. So if you were to say, let me pause you there.
So what I'm thinking here is various interruptions require different strategies for why you are interrupting. If someone's saying something really important, so this happens a lot, where someone's smart. And they have five things that they want to say. I've had another podcast for 11 years now, and very often my guests want to go on. And I said, let me pause you there and let's unpack what you just said. So that's actually flattering. Like, I'm eager to hear more about that. That is important, versus someone's just rambling and they're telling stories. And like, I would have a different way of doing it based on the reason for the interruption. If the interruption is like, hey, look, we don't have enough time, that's really important stuff, and I want to make sure we hear from everyone. Let me stop you there. I love what you're saying. Let's talk about it later. I want to make sure we're fair to everyone here.
Yeah, that's lovely. And it brings further validation. It also shows respect. And it also shows your curiosity and appreciation for what the other person has just said, that you want to delve deeper into that before going on. That's a really wonderful strategy. Another one is, if I may, let's focus on, so there you can take a bit of a break and you can observe the comma. If I may, let's refocus. Take a pause. Allow that to sink in and then suggest where you want to go with it. And then another one here is, before we go further, right? Before we carry on or before we go to the next point, this is another way to keep a combination of calm authority and clear direction. I know we're going a bit over time, but what mindset shift helps someone move from, I don't want to be rude, to I'm responsible for the room?
That means this isn't a show about me. As you said earlier, this isn't a performance. My job is to create a safe space for the things to get done that we need to get done. Everyone will be happier if I create the playground in which we can play effectively and are going to want to come back to.
Great. So let's move ahead here. To close with authority, you want to be able to summarize. You want to make sure that the decisions made are clear, the actions to take. So there's nothing worse than a weak ending to a meeting, because it can often destroy an otherwise good meeting or strong meeting.
Absolutely. The end of the meeting is the most important part of the meeting. And because there are things that have to happen to end a meeting, it often means sacrificing some of the agenda to make sure you get there and you're not sort of rushing or hastily doing things or putting things off until the meeting has ended and there's no more energy around it. So a weak ending can not only destroy a strong meeting, but a weak ending can affect every future meeting, because people are going to think, what's the point? You know, it's like going to watch a thriller movie and walking out 5 minutes before you discover who the villain was or what happens.
Good analogy. We have to look at the summarizing of the meeting, the decisions made, the actions to be taken, and the next steps, right? So you could say something like, to summarize where we are, we've agreed to launch in May, increase digital allocation by 20%, and reconvene next Friday. So that's kind of everything in a nutshell with those four steps of summary, decisions, actions, and next steps. And what would you say happens psychologically, Howie, when a leader fails to summarize decisions?
Then nobody knows who's doing what, and typically things don't get done, or two people try to do the same thing and step on each other's toes, another nice expression. And it feels like there's no point to these meetings. That's when people check out and when they come in doing other work under the table, because they know this is a charade rather than a crucial business process.
A quick look at vocabulary. Sometimes using the word chair as a verb is a little problematic for people because they're so used to seeing it as a noun, or table, to table this discussion. It doesn't work in every language.
English has a lot of furniture verbs.
We've got a lot of furniture in the room.
Yeah. So I like the way you couched that.
And circle back, we've seen, I think, a couple of times before, but it's just to remind people. And then the word scope. So if something is beyond the scope of this meeting, or maybe people are engaging in scope creep, they're slowly moving away from where they need to be. And then action items, wrap up, stay on track. And what we're going to do is I'm going to provide this presentation for people in the description so they can download it and have this as something handy. So in your next meeting, you can try to open with a more structured frame based on what we've been talking about today. You can redirect once with composure. Some people think that if you redirect too often in a meeting, that it does come across as being bossy. And then also close with a concise summary. So structure signals leadership.
So if you could give one mindset principle to someone who's leading in their second language, which is English, what would that be?
I would say that clarity is better than perfection. Clarity beats perfection every time. It's important to do your best, but don't obsess with being absolutely perfect. It's much more important that your ideas are getting across. So if you're trying to sound like a perfect native English speaker, this will cause you to hesitate. It'll cause you to second guess yourself. And you could even lose your presence in the room and people will stop paying attention to you. This is kind of going back to something we said earlier about, don't treat this like a performance, treat it like a conversation. So again, Clarity is better than perfection. Clarity beats perfection.
I love it.
So please subscribe to and share the Fluent Edge podcast with friends or colleagues who are working on their English or leadership communication. And if you're looking for support beyond the podcast, we've each opened up spots for one-on-one coaching. Howie helps professionals stay focused under pressure, lead high-stakes conversations, and develop the calm authority you need when you're chairing important meetings.
And if you're focused on leading meetings with clarity, sounding confident when you redirect discussion, or closing conversations with genuine authority, book a free discovery call with Sean to explore how the two of you can sharpen your structure, delivery, and executive presence in English. And remember, when a meeting starts drifting off topic, that's not a disaster. It's an opportunity to step in, reset the direction, and demonstrate your leadership. As Sean just said, clarity beats perfection every time.
And also remember, the strongest leader in the room isn't the one speaking the most. It's the one guiding the structure. So stay clear, stay calm, and keep your meetings on track. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.